Welcome to the One Life Maps podcast. Here's your host and co-author of Listen to My Life, Maps for Recognizing and Responding to God in My Story, Sharon Swing.
Greetings. We're so glad you've joined us today. Today, we have a special guest, Dr. Keith Anderson. Keith has recently retired after more than a decade at the Seattle School of Theology and Psychology, where he was the president. He spent his life in campus ministry on university and college campuses in the Midwest and pastored churches in Minnesota, Michigan, and Washington State. He's the author of numerous books, including A Spirituality of Listening, Spiritual Mentoring, and What They Don't Always Teach You at Christian College. His books have been published in 7 languages. But what I want to talk to Keith about today is reading your life story, an invitation to spiritual mentoring that was published last year, I believe. Is that right? From IVP.
I think so.
Well, thanks so much for joining us. We really appreciate you being here.
It is my pleasure to be with you.
Absolutely. So I'm just going to dive right in, if you don't mind. This book has so much content that I know that our listeners will be interested in. So I'm just going to ask you to focus on a few pieces up front. But where I'd love to start these interviews always is if you'd be willing to share with us a little bit about your spiritual upbringing or early remembrances of God in your story.
Well, I'm happy to do that. And it does fit directly with some of the background for me in this book, actually, because my life is a life that has been mentored by many good people, some of whom I don't think realized they were doing a kind of work in my life. But I grew up in a conservative Baptist home. We started a bit earlier than that, where I was part of a Salvation Army church on the south side of Chicago, where my parents, of course, in a Swedish congregation. It was a little bilingual at the beginning, and then all English, and then we moved out to the western suburbs of Chicago. Kind of a typical life in youth groups and churches, and then off to college in Minnesota in 1967. And there's just no way to talk about my spiritual development without talking about what was happening in the culture all around us. So civil rights, Vietnam, nuclear arms, all of that was kind of crashing around us. And I was moving, I think, from just a word-based spirituality into a much more experience-based spirituality. And what I mean by that is that I had grown up memorizing scripture, hearing it preached Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night, youth group, retreats, and all of that. And I think I was able to keep it at arm's length. When I got to college, my mind became engaged in a different way. And then I think all of me, probably like most of us during that period, had to figure out how does any of this relate to the world around us. And that became a new avenue of spirituality for us. Certainly it was for me, because I was trying to figure out what does God have to do with the fact that one of our conservative Baptist churches in the city of Chicago in 1968 is in a neighborhood that is in riots and burning. And so spirituality moved from a kind of disconnected abstraction into a different way of understanding spirituality and reality and the details of life. I could go on for much longer because I have reached, last week I reached the age of 70, so my story could be much longer than that.
Well, thanks for sharing those snippets. I really appreciate that. So in the midst of that story, what kinds of pictures of God were you handed? How did you view God?
Well, It's very interesting. I've been doing a little bit of work recently, some writing and a podcast recently on aging, because I was asked to do that. And I think it's because of my birthday, and also the fact that I'm retired. So I kind of can check the list for a lot of people of aging. And so I've been thinking through a lot of that. The picture of God, as I remember it, was that God was someone somewhat distant. God was a set of concepts, not personal. God was maybe not even somewhat. God was more a set of beliefs and ethics and behaviors. In some of my preparation for this work on aging, I read when I was 10 years old, a Wheaton College student did a psychology class, a study of me and my family, but I was the subject. And in there, she said that my view of God was all based on evangelism. That God was someone that we needed to help other people get to know so that they would be saved. So it was largely abstraction again. God was not someone who was Abba for me. And I would like to tell a story about when that became profoundly important for me, if I may take the time for that.
In fact, I was going to ask you that next.
Well, fast forward from being 10 years old to now, I'm a campus pastor in colleges, and I had the opportunity to encounter Brennan Manning, who was speaking at a conference that I attended out in Philadelphia. And I thought, this is someone I want to speak on our campus, because he began to kind of reach into my heart, sort of pull some things out that I didn't know were there. My emotions became entangled and engaged in that that first time that I heard him. So I brought him to our campus in Minnesota. Chapel was in a gymnasium in those days. And I was sitting in the front row. And to be honest, I was not paying a lot of attention to what he was saying, because I was planning out the rest of the day, trying to figure out how do I host him well. And in those days, probably all of his ministry, when Brennan would get to the end of his talk, he would reach down underneath the pulpit and pull out some cheesy, cheap plastic tape recorder, push a button, and play this song into the microphone. So all the sound was a little bit wonky in that way. But he played the song, and then he said, "Imagine yourself climbing into the lap of Abba Father, who says to you, 'I love you intensely and fiercely,' and then he speaks your name." When he was saying that, I was looking at my notes for the rest of the day, but then I looked down and I noticed that there was water on my shoes. So I looked around for a glass to see if I had spilled something. And it was in that moment that I realized, even though I was only half listening, the tears were falling from my eyes. And it was because of that picture of climbing into the lap of Abba and being held in that way. I still get emotional about it now. And that was a profoundly important kind of breakthrough for me. And it developed about a 15-year relationship with Brennan right up until his death.
How beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing that. Now, my next question, actually, I think it's related to that story, because you have this intense interest in life story and how it connects to spiritual formation. And these experiences of God, and like you said, you made this shift from kind of a head knowledge to an experiential knowledge. And so how do you describe the relationship between spiritual formation and life story?
Well, for me, this this really has everything to do with what I think people were trying to do with Scripture when I was a child, but I somehow didn't connect it well, or they didn't connect the dots for me. But it is that notion that Scripture is an unfolding story of what God has not only done, and that's the part that I got pretty well. I knew what God had done in history, but it's also what God is doing. And that's the grit of spirituality for me. It's this unfolding story of what God is doing in our lives. And it's this fierce conviction that I have that we are resurrection people. God has done something. God is doing something. The Bible is filled with stories of people, but it's not only to teach us about their story, it is to give us a portal into our own stories. So it's not this abstract kind of thing, but it is an awareness of what's being written by an author in our lives. And that for me is where it becomes just remarkably personal and deeply important. It is that you and I get to be in on that, that we are part of the story in the most ordinary and grounded ways. And so for me, my contention is very simple. And I think it's deeply scriptural, and that is that God shows up in the details of our lives. And so learning about our stories, learning to read our stories, learning to listen to our stories, learning that our life is story, that we, in fact, are story. We're not just a collection of random experiences. There is an unfolding plot to our lives written by the author. And God, of course, is that author.
Yes. So on page 18 of Reading Your Life Story, you talk about, you draw on this quote from Thomas Kelly, a Quaker teacher and writer and philosopher. And he talks a little bit about an inner sanctuary of the soul. And why don't you talk a little bit about that?
Well,
its relationship to what you were just saying there.
That to me is the heart of biblical spirituality. And it actually goes back. InterVarsity published this little pamphlet many years ago. I would guess a lot of people have read it. Called My Heart, Christ's Home. And it was, I think it was probably deeper than most of us understood, but that's what Kelly is talking about, that he says there is an amazing inner sanctuary of the soul within us all, a holy place, a divine center, a speaking voice to which we may continuously return. And that for me is the heart of the spirituality that I now seek to live and to practice. It's what Brennan was talking about, that this place that we climb up into the lap of Abba is this divine center within us. It's a sanctuary. It's a place where presence, the Old Testament word of Shekinah, the presence of God, the glory of God found in the cave and on the mountain and with Elijah and with Jesus and the two on the top of the mountain. That's what our spirituality is. It's why our stories become so important to us, because it's learning to pay attention to where God's presence, where God's Shekinah glory is found in our lives. The reality is that presence is sometimes found in the darkest parts of our lives, in the failures. And if we're honest, biblical spirituality tells us that we're, my language is that we're failed, flawed, and finite people. Again, I think the spirituality of my childhood just didn't talk much about the fierce reality with which we all live. I remember as a child, we had on Wednesday nights for a long time, we had testimony times. I mean, this sounds really old, old school, old fashioned style, I suppose. But the problem was that those testimonies were always and only told after somebody felt that they had gotten through the crisis. It was never a call for prayer in the midst of the crisis or in the midst of the failure. Remember, we had one man in our church who just battled with alcohol, and we all knew it. And it wasn't until shortly before his death that he gave a testimony about how he had won the battle over alcohol, and then he died shortly after that. And same is true, not only of addictions, but of moral failures and marital failures and in all of the pain that we live with. I think I didn't realize until I began to pay better attention to my own story and then to listen well to the story of others, how much we're caught in shame and heartache and heartbreak, failures and losses.
Right. I mean, the work of Listen to My Life, the reason we're so excited about the books that you've written and the things you talk about is because we so resonate with this idea that in the here and now, we want to be able to recognize and respond to God in our stories. And if we've lost the handle on the plot of our story, which is entirely possible, to be rather unaware of the plot that's unfolding, we somehow also cannot see the presence of God in the here and now, in me, with me, around me, through me, as a living experience.
Well, I'm convinced that you're not only onto something that's a good idea for 2019, I think you're onto something that has been at the heart of certainly the Jewish faith, the telling of stories, heart of Jesus' life and ministry, the heart and life of the early church, and the little bit of church historian that I am realizes that at some point spirituality went off to the university and from there it became abstraction. And when it was abstracted, then the connection to story, it didn't get lost, but it got it moved only to the to the brain, I think. And, you know, that's somebody who's spent the last 35 years or more in higher education. So I'm not opposed to higher education, but I want a spirituality that that recognizes where that connection is. Because listening to story is drawing near to the heart of God.
Right. And there's you quote it well in your description here. You said, the Hebrew word for dwelling or settling is an experience of the very presence of God grounded in the soil of life. You know, I just love that, grounded in the soil of life, you know, the nitty gritty of it, of it all, that's intertwined with the roots and the worms and the and everything else. And this idea of being able to actually have tools to help people reflect on their story, and invite God to show them what he wants them to notice, and then be able to actually tell their story after doing that, so they're reflecting on their reflection, right? And then to help have a good listener there who may have a few additional questions that might help people make some other additional connections of where God has been at work through it all. And that's where your book ends up moving toward, is this spiritual mentoring piece that we want to get to in another podcast episode, because there's so much there we'd like to tease out. But why don't you give just a quick overview of the elements of holy narrative as you describe it?
Yeah, thank you. Maybe my most used and favorite quote is from a writer I don't know. I think her name is Paula D'Arcy, but she said, "God comes to us disguised as our life."
Yeah, we use that quote often. Yes.
I don't know anything much about her, but I love it because it means that that the Shekinah glory is present, that God is there. We just are not always aware of it, and I think partly because we've come to think of spirituality as mimicking somebody else's story, some biblical character or some leader or someone else, instead of saying, how do I pay attention to the narrative, the story, the unfolding of my own life? And for me, it's fairly simple, textual criticism from seminary days, that there's an author, there's a reader, and there's a text. And in my spirituality, it means that God is present and God is intending to do something in my life, which for me has been profoundly important for the work that I've done. I've worked with college students for many, many years, and then ended up with graduate students, and we talked constantly about this notion of vocare, of being called, of vocation, and a realization that God has some intention for my life. Well, how do I find out what that calling is, that intention is, if I'm only paying attention second or third hand to somebody else's story? So there is an author, which means there is someone who intends something in my story.
Not only the author of a biblical text, but an author of my story. Right.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I go back to seminary days where I learned for the first time that Luke Acts was actually a two-volume work written by the same writer, by Luke. And the notion presented to us was that Luke was the Gospel of Luke is chapter 1, the story of what God has done in the person of Jesus. And Acts is volume 2, the story of what God is doing through the Holy Spirit of Jesus in our lives. And if I read that well, that means that I'm learning what God is doing in my life, and that it's an active, I'm not passive as I listen, and I'm not just looking for Jesus behind every bush. It's not that. It's that I am learning how to listen deeply because I'm convinced that there is this inner presence, this speaking voice, this author who is at work now in my life. And so there's an author, there's a reader, or many readers that help us. And that for me is part of the connection back to mentoring, is that I need others to help me do that. And there's a text, which sounds terribly obvious. When I read, I'm reading a text. Right now I'm reading some texts on Sherlock Holmes. A couple of months ago, don't ask me how this happened, I started reading a biography that turned out to be 2,000 pages on Stalin. I don't know what that was about. I'm trying to figure that out. But there are these texts And so there's content, and there's vocabulary, and there's progression, and there's shape, and there's all of that. And I think in what I hear that you all are doing, it's an understanding that this is holy work. Mm-hmm. It's not just reading a story passively, but being engaged by it as we read it. And reading it purposefully, that's the other part of it. It leads us to what I think is one of the great questions of all spirituality, and maybe the great question of mentoring, which is what's next. So based on what I hear, based on what I see, based on what I understand is God is doing in my life, what's next? Where does that take me in faithfulness to what I've been hearing?
Yes. And, you know, that we have on our first map, which is My Life Now, we have this last question in the midst of that, that after a survey of your current life, it's a lingering question. You know, what's the question that lies beneath the surface here? For me in this moment, me in this period of time, what does my mind drift toward while I'm in the times in between, while I'm driving or in the shower or whatever else? Or what am I drawn toward? What's the angst? You know, what is it for you right now? And if people can articulate that, because sometimes it's right top of mind. Other times people have to dig for it a little bit. And sometimes it's a very practical question, like, should I take this job or that job, or should I move mm-hmm. here or stay or whatever? And sometimes for a long time, my lingering question in essence, which I think will probably be part of my life story, I mean, my life question is, let's see, how did I phrase it? What would it look like if I allowed God's love to eradicate my fears?
Mm-hmm.
You know, live basically unresponsive to anything but the voice of God's love mm-hmm. in my life. And I mean, that's how I want to live. And that lingering question unfolds a different kind of daily life story. Because if I'm paying attention to that, and what does that look like for today or in this hour or in this moment? It becomes guiding for me. Yeah.
And I think some of those are questions that are life questions that it's not that they just linger, but that they are, they're living in us. And there isn't a quick answer for us. I went from parish ministry, pastoral ministry in the inner city to a college in South Dakota where I was teaching part-time and a campus pastor. I didn't even know what that meant. To many more years in campus ministry. Ended up directing a grant for the Lilly Endowment in vocational formation, and then ended up in a president's role in a standalone graduate school, young school, and a president's job, which meant a lot of administrative work and the dreaded.
Oh,
I think I dropped my phone.
Yes, the dreaded.
Sorry,
actually, back. So you ended up with a job. Why don't you just back up till there?
The dreaded word of fundraising. So when I said that word fundraising, I got panicky. I guess and dropped my phone. But my wrestling was always, how can I remain faithful to my calling, which has always been a pastoral call? And could I do that in the role of president of a graduate school? And I think I did. But it took a different form and different shape than I had thought it might earlier.
Yeah, and that aspect of seeing your life as a story, and that there is a storyline that's playing out, and a lot of times we talk about it as it's helping people sort out their stories, what to take with them and what to leave behind. And sometimes in transitions, that's a really good question. And what's fitting here for me and what isn't, and what do I need to actually lean into and just endure or learn more about, or find a different perspective on it, or what do I need to just say no to, becomes part of the plot too.
Yes, absolutely. So, I agree.
Yeah. So anyway, you got through the elements of some of the elements of Holy Narrative, and the events and the ordinary and surprising that form the backbone of the story and context as the plot develops. I think that's where you were. And then we were moving toward there may be a resolution, I thought. Why don't you talk a little bit about that?
Well, it's a little of what I meant by the purposefulness of our spirituality and of our listening, of recognizing that God is lurking, as one novelist put it. Our God lurks everywhere. And it leads us to action. It leads us to something next. And there is a sense in which it also leads us to a sense of maybe not always contentment, because I think if we're people of the kingdom of God, there's always a holy discontent in us. I think Jesus created some of that for us. But it leads us out from our own stories, which is for me the what makes a spirituality of story and of listening, seeing God in our lives in this way, very different than the kind of narcissism and the kind of the social media. I'm gonna tweet this out to you so that you know I'm now having dinner and I'm going over here and I'm doing this. You know, it becomes a narcissistic kind of thing. Scripture and story, as we pay attention to God in it, is always moving us. Even as we're focusing on our story, God is moving us away, not away from, but out from our story toward others. I go back to my churches in the 60s. I remember going back as a college student and asking the church elders, what happened to us that we did not pay attention to what we then called a sister church in the inner city of Chicago in the midst of the riots? We were very focused on missions, foreign missions, especially to Africa in those days. But it didn't translate into something that moved us toward sisters and brothers 28 miles away from us in Chicago.
Right.
There wasn't a good answer for it. Yeah, there was no answer.
I was consulting with a denomination at one point, and with the president of the denomination sitting there, some people came in and in the midst of what we were doing needed to do a presentation for a bit, and they showed a video about a campaign that they were going to be releasing denomination wide that was about missions. It was about evangelism, they said. It was about evangelism, and the whole video and everything was focused on what a lot of people would call missions and third world countries, and you know where money was going, and to put people in school and build churches and things of that kind. And we were actually in the midst of doing some consulting work around evangelism, And so I was struck by the fact that evangelism, what it meant was going to third world countries and doing this kind of stuff. And basically it was about raising money to do that. Nothing yeah. wrong with that at all. But if our idea is that far removed, and I wasn't really involved in that part of the conversation. I was there for a different reason. But this man turns to me and he says, "What do you think of this?" He says, "I need an outside perspective here." And I said, "Well," and I paused long and I thought, "Okay, do I actually say what I'm thinking or not?" And my words were, "Well, I could write a check for that and it wouldn't cost me anything."
Yeah.
And it's that, how close to me is this? Do I get to remove this idea of being on mission? Do I get to push all that away from me? Do my everyday here and now actions about what I do with my neighbors and the conversations I have and can I just push them off somewhere else around the world, or is it in the here and now for me in my relationships with anybody I meet along the way? And it's just one of those things that somehow that distance is the reason I tell the story. It's kind of like everything we do to distance ourselves from God's presence in our life and his call on my day and in this moment, and can I recognize and respond to him in the here and now and actually live in my life as Jesus would live if he were here? And he is. He's living in me and he intends to live through me as me right now.
And
so yeah, so that is so much about what we love about Life Story Work. And as we do this kind of thing and we invite people to dive into their stories and then listen to the stories of others and share their stories using some pretty good listening guidelines that help us keep on track with that, they're listening to other stories a lot of times is what gives us perspective on being able to see our own story in a different way. Not thinking, because our own stories, it's like we're swimming in our own fishbowl. We can't see. we can't see our own story a lot of times because we're too close to it. We're in it. And so you talk about race, place, face, and grace. That's race, place, face, and grace. I don't think I pronounced it well enough. As kind of handles on some of that closeness that we need to kind of tease out and be able to kind of remove ourselves from to be able to look at it a little bit. Can you say a few words about that before we close?
Sure. I actually think those were that quartet of words was from a 19th century preacher, but I heard it for the first time from an African American pastor in a church on the south side of Chicago. It was breathtaking to me, because it brought home, this was, Bo Ford, was his name. This is a man who, had this massive upper body development. He tore his shirt preaching one time. And I was thinking about how I have preached all of my life. I've never come close to that. I might have lost a button, but that was a different kind of thing. But he just stared us down in the congregation, and he said, "There are four things that you had absolutely nothing to do with. You can't claim any glory for it. You can't claim any responsibility for it. These were four things that were given to you by the Creator God at your birth and in your life. And those are the four of race." As the first one, the great sin, and for me, just absolute contradiction in racism is anyone claiming that they had something to do with race. Before you're born, you don't get a checklist and you get to check your preferred race. You are given that. You have nothing to do with that. Face, meaning kind of physical characteristics. You know, if I had something to do with that, I would have more hair than I have left, and I would probably be 3 or 4 inches taller. I didn't get those. Those were given to me. In all of their goodness, and at times in the painfulness of it and the limitations of it. I have a very close friend who is now retired to Florida with his probably 35-year-old son now, who has been in a wheelchair since about 4 or 5 years old. He is brilliant. He understands everything. He reads everything, but he can't move any of his limbs. So he communicates through a computer by using a mouth mouse and technology. And he emails people and is involved in all kinds of things and studies. He had nothing to do with that. I have an older brother who was brain damaged during the birth process. That was his given, and I was given a healthy body. Place means kind of if face has to do with DNA and family background. You know, I'm the grandson of Swedish immigrants. Proud to be that. I love what those people brought to Chicago when they came right around 1902 and 1903. Place is the fact that I was born into a white middle-class family, south side of Chicago first, and then western suburbs. And the privilege of that and the education that I've had, that's part of what place means. Now, we make some choices in that. But place is also given to us. You know, I did not choose to be white middle class or white upper middle class. That was part of my life story. And then grace, you know, what more can be said about that? God's grace is given to us. It is the Shekinah glory of the greatest gift God has ever had for us. That even in our sinfulness, all of us in our brokenness, that we're given this gift of Jesus, it's also breathtaking for us. Right? It ought to be. It ought to be, not be something that we take for granted. Race, face, place, grace. Just all given to us. And our task then is to receive and then to live faithfully within those givens.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And so to co-author our story, given those things and in a keen awareness of those things. I think when people miss the fact that those things are in play in their own story, they can't see their own story. They can't see the forest through the trees, so to speak, in a lot of ways. I also just received another book by Daniel Hill. It's called White Awake. And, you know, talking about his awakening to his whiteness and being challenged by someone of color to understand his own culture, his own white culture, and what that means in relationship to when white culture meets up or bumps up against black culture or any other culture. And what that dynamic looks like, that we can be blind to these particular these particular aspects of, in that case, just a book about race and waking up to who we are in the midst of that, and what that means in our perception of it being, if we're not awake to it, we play out our story in a different way, kind of being not only unaware of ourselves, but unaware of our impact on others.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And that's all part of spiritual growth.
I have a dear friend, Brenda Salter McNeil, who said to me and to a group of others once that we will never make progress in racism until we recognize that we're all ethnic. We can dismiss immigrants as ethnic, as other than us. We can, for me, I can dismiss people of color as other than me because they have that kind of ethnicity and race that is different. But we're all ethnic. We've all been shaped by these things. And that's part of what I think that race, face, place, and grace means too, is that we're all part of this same God-blessed, God-given family, God-graced family.
Family, meaning we have to figure this out together too.
That is exactly correct.
Yes. Yeah, so, okay. I know that our time is up, and I appreciate you staying with me at this point. Tell me, tell our listeners what you would like them to know about how to reach you, or what you'd like to have them know or point their attention toward.
Well, I would love for them to we didn't get into this, but you know, my love is really not in selling of books. It is in keeping alive the movement that I think is centuries deep, the movement of mentoring, of people telling their stories and being helped by others tell their stories. So for me, that's always the first thing, is I want people to find mentors, to recognize that, except in very few cases, we all are able to be mentors to others. So that's first. My other books have all been published by University Press, and that's probably the best way to get hold of me, is just to contact universitypress.com. My other book from a couple of years ago is The Spirituality of Listening, which to me goes hand in hand with everything that we've been talking about today. It's how do we listen, and it's recognizing that the place that it all began is in the earliest moments of history. It says, "And God said." So God has been speaking and revealing, and our task is to listen and to respond and to become stewards of what we hear. Those would be the things on my mind and my heart today. And gratitude for you and for all that you're doing. Appreciate it very, very much.
We, I hope, can be counted among your movement of mentoring, for sure. It is what we are so passionate about. And we'd love to have you back as well. So thank you so much. This has been Dr. Keith Anderson, the author of Reading Your Life Story, An Invitation to Spiritual Mentoring, published by University Press. I suppose it's available on Amazon or where any good fine books are sold. So I hope you've enjoyed this episode so much. Also, don't forget that we have a facilitator certification workshop coming up November 18th for people who choose to mentor and be spiritual directors or coaches or counselors. Using the Listen to My Life materials, we can equip you to use those materials. It's a 2.5-day workshop in the Chicago area, and we'd love to invite you for that. We've also got a virtual group of Listen to My Life starting September 10th. You can find out more about that on the One Life Maps website. We'd love to invite you to check us out. So if you have any questions, use that contact form there. on the website, onelifemaps.com. So once again, I hope you have a wonderful day today, and Keith, thank you again.
It's been my honor. Thank you very much.
Well, many blessings.
This podcast is sponsored by onelifemaps.com, creators of unique visual life mapping materials titled Listen to My Life, Maps for Recognizing and Responding to God in My Story. Go to onelifemaps.com to purchase your Listen to My Life portfolio of visual life maps. While you're there, check out our upcoming virtual coaching groups, live workshops, and options for you to facilitate the Listen to My Life experience with others. That's onelifemaps.com. onelifemaps.com. Please subscribe, rate, review, and share this podcast with others. You can help support this podcast and the work of One Life Maps by supporting us on Patreon. Go to www.patreon.com/onelifemaps to pledge $5 or more per month and get weekly audio meditations to help you recognize and respond to God in your story. Thank you for tuning in to the One Life Maps podcast. Until next time, make the most of this one life that you've been gifted.